John Wolstead, welcome to Queer Radio on 4ZZZ.
Your 10 minutes starts now.
You are credited prominently, I might add, for the film The Rage.
I get a whole, what's known as a card, I get a whole card to myself.
Hooray.
I should be dealt with. Yeah.
In The Rage in Placid Lake, which opened last Thursday, around cinemas, certainly it's featuring at the Palace Centro on James in the Valley here.
I think it's probably on another half a dozen screens in Brisbane, but I'm not absolutely sure. But you can go to rageinplacidlake.com, I think, and probably find out what screens it's on. But yeah, it is on it. My mum tells me it's on at Stafford, for instance, which is good. The suburbs. Yeah, that is good.
And you're credited as being the sound supervisor.
Yes, a man in a grey coat with some multicoloured pens, and that's always been my vision. It's the usage of the word supervisor, see?
Mm.
It means somebody who's with thick glasses, thoughtfully walking around saying things like, Beryl, I don't think that's quite right. Do you? Okay, so that's me.
But you have the skills these days to be able to do that.
These days? The implication is that I didn't have the skills in the past.
Well, when you were 17, perhaps.
I do have the skills to do this, apparently. It's done. Mm-hmm. I did it, so yes, I suppose so.
Making a film that sounds good, it's not just a matter of skills. It is an art.
When you said sound supervisor, it brings up a point. See, a lot of people of my generation who work in this industry would call themselves sound designers, okay, because that is the term. Since the 1970s, since Walter Murch and The Conversation, Apocalypse Now, probably Star Wars as well, the idea of the sound designer became part of the sort of fabric of screen culture, say. I myself see myself as perhaps more of a craftsperson than an artist. I don't see it as being very arty. But I don't see anything as being very arty. You know, I see music in the same kind of way. So I just feel like it's just about using your ears and your brain together, you know? And the job of being the boss in that sort of situation is really much more about hiring good people and being a good kind of office person, really. It's more about being able to budget and hiring the right people is like the very essence of it, because then you hire the right people and they make all the good creative decisions.
Excellent.
And yeah, you know my job is about kind of big broad kind of things, and then other people actually do take care of the detail. And this film isn't a very big arty sound film. It's a film which is all about talking. It's about dialogue. So it's you know, first kind of rule was we got to hear all the dialogue, you know. And, you know, you might look at any Robert Altman film and say that's not always the case with a Robert Altman film, where there might be 10 people in a room, 5 conversations between, you know, 5 groups of 2 sort of thing. And later in the making of the film, during the editing, he might make decisions about, and all those conversations are recorded, well recorded, so at the time of the shooting there's no necessary focus on any one of those conversations, and later he might choose to move the focus from, even though the picture might stay with these two people here, we might start hearing those two people over there. And so, you know, with this film it was much more obvious than that. It's the people on the screen are the ones doing the talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. You also are credited further along at the end of the film.
You're a little bit too observant, aren't you, John Frame?
With the ADR editing?
Yes. And the music editing, probably, but I didn't actually look. But, yeah.
No, I just wanted to point out to listeners that you did have your hands on there.
Oh, no, I did actually. I didn't just lie around on a couch answering the phone. Well, certainly not for much longer than the first few weeks. Mm. But I did ADR editing, which is... that's all the dialogue, you know, and I don't choose what the ADR is going to be. There was a dialogue editor, and she decided, between her and the director, they decided, you know, what lines had to be replaced for a variety of reasons. You know, ADR, which is done on, you know, most films these days, is done for a whole variety of reasons. Some of them are technical and some of them are performance. And with ours, I think it was almost all technical issues, you know. There might have been, you know, some you know, low rumbling in the boom pole or something like that, which was hard to get out of the dialogue, or there might have been some, you know, bad traffic noise or whatever it might be. You know, all sorts of things can affect dialogue in a film, and ADR editing is it's an idiot's task. It's it's perfect for me because it's all really about here's this bit of audio, there's that bit of audio, make them match. You know, and that means you know, stretching syllables in and out and stretching words in and out, and just kind of making things fit people's mouths so that they're believable. Because when it gets done, you get it pretty close. You know, you're looking at it while it's being done, and you go, "Yeah, okay, that's good. We move on to the next line." But the reality is, when you actually sit down later and examine it, and you usually only examine it by, and now it becomes like some kind of forensics thing. You've really just got two waveforms on a screen, sitting in front of a Macintosh with these two waveforms, and going, "Oh, okay, they don't actually match. So I've got to make them match." You know, and it's funny. Words are funny, but once you start kind of getting into this amount of detail in sound, I find it really interesting. You know, that a word can start and end in the right place, but in the middle it can do all sorts of things. So it's actually very difficult to, you know, fuck around with them and still end up with something that works well, because it doesn't matter how much you do this so that the pictures all match. Then if you go ahead and listen to it and it doesn't sound like a human being anymore, well, then you're in big trouble. Well, because it's about processing then. Things get over-processed, and when they get over-processed, they no longer sound natural. Yeah. You know, and that applies to all sorts of things, not just editing like this, but, you know, when you mix things, you know, so when you put reverb on something, if the reverb's too big, it doesn't sound natural anymore. If it's got to feel like it's this room here, if it's supposed to be this room here and it's the reverb is a big hall, well, then it's not going to work, you know. And we would, you know, I would consider that in the same kind of light. It's been over-processed.
Sure.
You
know? But I saw Placid Lake last night at the Palace Centro in James. Mm-hmm. And it really did, in that comfy theatre where they've got a big screen, superb sound system, comfy chairs.
Yep.
All of the sounds seem appropriate.
What is this, like an ad?
Practically. No, it's just...
It is a very comfortable cinema and the sound is very good. I agree with you there, John. Yep.
So do you particularly appreciate then that cinemas like this exist that can have dynamic, almost perfect sound?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. It's... I think this, the multiplex, the small cinema, you know, the boutique cinema, shall we say, you know, that's comfortable and usually kind of raked quite steeply, so it's a little bit, there's a little bit of that IMAX-y thing about it. Everybody's, you know, you don't really notice the people in front of you too much. The chairs are quite comfortable. The sound is very much around you. I think these sorts of cinemas, they're like a concession to... This isn't why they happened, but they're like a concession to the home cinema thing. Only I think that the whole home cinema thing is, from my point of view, pointless, because I think one of the best things about going to the cinema is being in a room with other people.
Yeah.
And it's like going to see a band. It's if you're in a room on your own watching a band, it's not nowhere near as interesting as being in a room with 500 people. So not that I would think that 500 people seeing a film is a pleasant experience, but certainly it's always been a shared human experience, yeah?
Mm.
So I think it kind of works better when you're part of a crowd. And I saw this film, The Rage in Placid Lake, at the Brisbane Film Festival a couple of weeks ago for the first time. I've seen it, you know, thousands and thousands of times, but not as a finished product because I wasn't in Sydney when all the initial screenings were held, but I saw it in a big room, you know. It's upstairs and it's a big cinema, and I wouldn't know how many people that you put in a room like that, but that'd be, you know, it's a 500 kind of seat cinema or something. And no matter how good the sound system is in a room that size, you know, it's never a great oral experience, I don't think. And there are lots of reasons for that, you know. A room full of people that size, just like, you know, when you do a sound check and you're in a band and there's three roadies in the room, it's, you know, everything sounds a particular way, and then suddenly 5 hours later when there's 1,000 people in the room, it sounds completely different.
Yep.
I'll just get the phone, shall I?
What I thought was great about the quality of the sound, the comfortableness, the appropriateness of the sound for The Rage in Placid Lake, was that it makes it very easy then to concentrate or just take in the rest of the film.
It's supposed to be a synergistic thing,
yeah.
In the sense that it's one of those things that if you can hear it, then it's, you know, not doing its job sort of thing. It should be just a completely kind of absorbing experience, and everything that happens in the sound should actually simply support what the pictures are doing, which is telling a story. It's all about telling a story, and there is no thing which is more important than any other thing. The pictures are not more important than sound. The sound's not more important than the pictures. It's just about the story. And so, the sound is really there to simply support that the whole time and drag you in when you need dragging. And sound is great because it can actually, you can shift focus on the screen. You know, screens are, no matter what you think about them, are two-dimensional, okay? Yeah. It's a two-dimensional medium. And I think sound gives it a third dimension. So it actually can make you focus, you know, on different parts of the screen, or, you know, it can make you focus on something that's coming up. You can put a sound in for a bit of vision that's on its way, do you know what I mean? So the sound precurses the picture. So you're actually, it's kind of taking the mind past the picture that's actually there and into the next picture, which you haven't even seen yet, you know? And I find that sort of stuff quite, that's all fascinating, you know?
Yep. It's very comfortable editing as well, too. So it's a pure joy for your head, I think, from start to finish.
Well, that's very nice of you to say, so.
My idea of the way the film presents, Placid Lake was born to middle-class pseudo-hippie intellectuals who projected onto Placid all their theoretical expectations for coping with life. Understanding why unpleasant things are happening to you, though, doesn't make them easier to bear. And I liked Jane Elliott's Blue-Eyed program, the way she demonstrated as part of that, that she had this woman sort of try to give her the answer she was expecting so that she might get treated more nicely.
Yeah.
And all Jane Elliott did was she changed the rules.
Yeah. But, well, it's codependent behaviour, isn't it? You know, constantly trying to please other people. So just constantly changing yourself to keep everybody happy, and you can't keep everybody happy, and the only person you can ever really make happy is yourself, you know? But I don't know whether the film's about that. Don't start asking me what the film's about. I have no idea. I was still asking questions, like, you know, towards the very end of the process after I'd been on it for, you know, months, saying things like, oh, I see, that's his sister, eh? You know, okay. Wow. It's just stuff like that, which I just don't see sometimes. You know, sometimes I really do get lost in detail or something and suddenly lose the point of the fucking story, or, you know.
I don't think anyone will lose the plot, but what they'll do when they come out of the end of this film is they'll still have some things to think about, like, why did this happen? Like, there's a scene where Placid winds up breaking every bone in his body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a significant part of the film for a few reasons.
Yep.
But it's a film that makes you work as well as being entertaining.
Right.
It's a comedy. It's a love story. It's a bit of a drama.
Yep. It's got all those things. I think it's inevitably a love story, you know, I think. Even though it is about his journey, you know, to self-awareness or something. It is a love story. It ends up like a love story, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, there are real-life elements in Placid Lake. It's not surreal to the point where it gets away from real life. And I think that this is the main appealing quality of it, that it's anchored firmly in realism.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is the concern that when young people are harassed for being who they are, they do then go through the rest of their life wondering whether how they have grown up is a response to how they got harassed when they were young.
Yeah, that's very true, you know. I mean, in his case, he gets badly beaten by, you know, he gets called a poofter and badly beaten by boys for no reason at all. One of the boys is gay. And I'm not giving too much away, I suppose. But and then later on, in his, you know, transformation, he meets them again and goes, look, I'm here now, I'm just like you, you know, it's like, I'm here, we're all here now, sort of thing. And they just bash him because he's, you know, it's like, well, what's the, you know, he's never there, you know, you're never going to please people like that. People are, you know, people are going to be horrible to you, you know, then it's their problem, you know, it's not yours. You're never going to be able to, you know, that's one of the big things, I suppose, about life and about a film like this is you can't change other people. You cannot change other people. You can only change yourself. So, and that's a good lesson. And that's a really hard lesson. I'm 46, and I can say that, but I still think that, you know, I'm sure I don't believe it, Do you know what I mean? And I only even learned how to say it in the last 5 years. So I think it takes a long time to figure that sort of stuff out sometimes.
Yeah.
And I doubt very much whether this, you know, this kid at 21 or whatever he is has really got that sussed, you know?
Yeah, but he's on the way.
He's on the way.
Yeah.
Yes, which is really good, you know?
Yep.
I actually think it's a really good film and people should go and see it. I think that's important. I think we should all support the Australian film blah, 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 blah industry, you know? And I think this is quite a different film. You know, it's not kind of funny in that Mick Molloy kind of way. And it's also not a, it's not a kind of quirky bank robber drama. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But it's a romantic comedy, you know, and I don't think there are very many. I don't think Australia is renowned for its romantic comedies, and I think that this is one. You know, this is a romantic comedy in the, in a Howard Hawks kind of way, or in a, you know?
Yeah, it's warming and amusing, and there are some times when you do laugh out loud, but mostly it's just, yeah, a rich, colourful, very satisfying film.
It's got some good gags.
Yeah.
And it, overall, it's actually, I think it's really beautifully written. I think he's a great writer. Yeah, and plenty more in him. He's prolific, so.
Yeah, and for Tony McNamara's first feature film, this is also a very good start.
Well, it's only his, you know, he did two films at film school with me, and then this is his next film. So, you know, that's it's a very good start, I think. Yeah.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, John Wallstead, sound supervisor for The Rage in Placid Lake.
I'm the one in the grey coat.
Congratulations, John.
Thank you, John.